Watch it. Boys bracing. There we go. And go hard. And go hard. Very good.
The Paddler's Pod with Sam and Macca.
Let's not mess around. Give the people what they want to hear, Macca. Say hello.
G'day all. How are we?
Oh, the sound of his voice. That is so good to hear.
It's good
and on the Paddler's Pod with Sam and Macca. That is right. Mackenzie Heinart is back in the podcast studio, mate. Hello. How are ya?
Good. Good. It's been a while, although we've almost spoken every day ever since the last time I was on a podcast episode with you, but it's the first time I've done one of these, I believe, this year, which is terrible on my behalf.
It's great to have you back today, though, Mac. We have been keeping the listeners posted about what you've been up to running the Shore and Partners Summer of Surf, mate. One question I've got for you, how much do you want to run more events in future in the ocean ski world after a summer on every beach around the country?
I think I'm going to give it to Dino to continue running that Australian Ocean Racing Series for a while. I was only thinking today, though, I should probably preempt that I'm going to be so critical of people running events now, and it's just hardwired in my brain. So I do apologize if you cop any constructive criticism at me at events anytime soon.
Oh, bitchy, I love it. Now, Matthew, you have stopped being an event organizer and you've started being an athlete again.
Oh,
3 months.
Yeah.
You had not paddled for until you got back into training, mate. That is unbelievable. How has it been since you've got back into the swing of things? Because I know you've been doing a fair bit.
Yeah, look, it's a get fit fast campaign. It's hard. It's a really hard work. I've been trying to do about 3 sessions a day, just trying to lose all that puppy fat I've put on, just eating nonsense and shit over the last 3 months of doing no exercise. But it's so nice. I don't think you realise when you don't do exercise, it becomes the norm about after 3 or 4 weeks when you're just in work mode, 7 till 7. Once you get back to doing exercise, geez, you feel good. And you don't realise how good you can feel until you start back, really. But everything's going well. Look, it's going to be a while before I'm back fighting for a podium, but that's the aim.
A bit like reporting a podcast, hey? Just takes a little bit of time just to get back into it.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I was probably a bit rusty at the start, so I also apologise for that.
Oh, mate, I think you're going to slip straight back in. And straight into it we go, mate. Let's do it, hey?
Let's jump in. I should probably just say a quick thank you to Trimmy and Austin, who stepped in for me and probably did better for me, if anything. I'm sorry
come
if you
on, nah.
Hate me voice on the welcome back.
Trimmy, Austin, and Big Men's, the 3 guest hosts we have. But, mate, it just feels so right to have you back, Macca. It feels like normal, so let's go.
Let's jump in.
The Paddler's Pod. Power Plays.
The Power Plays brought to you by a new sponsor to the podcast, All Wave Surf Skis. We'll be having a bit of a chat about them a little bit later on, but so good to have them on board for the very first time.
Number 3.
Mac, if there's one thing we love talking about on this podcast, it is blokes getting chicked. Trimmy and I almost got done by Danielle McKenzie. We had a great laugh about that on the last episode of the podcast. And there's another really strong example of just how much women's paddling is continuing to grow and grow. Saskia Hockley, she's still a junior. She's the junior surf ski world champion hailing from South Africa. And she has picked up some big scalps in the latest round of the Chalupski Properties Surf Ski Marine Series, one of South Africa's most well-known surf ski series. Saskia finished in 9th place overall. Her name popped out. It had the top 10 listed. The top 10 listed overall, Maddie Bowman at the very top of that. And there in 9th was Saskia Hockley. Obviously, she took out the women's as well. But what I love most about this, Mac, is that she wasn't a lone female charging at the front of the field. Bridget Hartley was only just outside the top 10 as well. So some really good company, Mac. A star of the future, Saskia. Wow, she just continues to get better and better.
How good's this? I'm coming straight back into chicks just smacking dudes right around the time of International
careful,
Women's Day. I know. I was thinking about racing this weekend. I'm going to have second thoughts about that because I would not live that down. But, you know, props to her. I remember we were talking back when the Cape point challenge was on, and I put her in to be the dark horse to win. So maybe my prediction is not too far off in the future. If she's starting to do this sort of damage locally, it's not going to be that far off before she really runs rampant on the international stage.
Well, she's got some of the best minds in surf ski paddling around her, guiding her through as well. We know how close she is with Michelle Byrne, the ICF world champion, but she's also coached by Matt Bowman, one of the legends of the sport. Matt took the win at that race, but he had some really kind words to say about Saskia afterwards. He said that she just keeps on improving and will be a difficult human to beat at the Junior Marathon Worlds. Valma Jean, her younger sister, showed a lot of patience to time trial on her own to take third as well. So the Hockley sisters from South Africa, Maka, will be speaking about them plenty more into the future because, wow. Maka, what I love most about this is that that gap is getting closer with every single race in every corner of the world, from the fastest male to the fastest female. So with athletes like Saskia coming through, the standard is going to only continue to rise.
I'm really looking forward to it. And as international racing starts back up, it's going to be really interesting to see this how this unfolds on the international stage, like you just mentioned.
So here at the Paddlers Pod, we will continue to pay tribute to every time that guys are out there getting chicked, because we love we love seeing the way that women's paddling is continuing to improve. And yes, we are certainly checking over our shoulder.
Number two.
Huge news, mate. Huge news in the surf ski world.
Big,
it's actually quite impressive that this isn't number one today on the podcast. That's how big this news is.
Yeah.
Kenny Rice is no longer a Team Think paddler.
Massive.
The ICF silver medalist, the three-time winner of the Gorge, three-time winner of the Cape Point Challenge, one of our best friends, Maka. He's left you at Team Think and he's made the big decision to start paddling Fenn. In an article that you can read now on the paddler.news, Kenny spoke for the first time about the switch and he explains the reasons behind it. In short, the Think Kayak family is such a close-knit family that Kenny says that he's really struggled the last couple of years with COVID and not being able to link up with them and enjoy paddling with them and also be connected to them too. He's the only Team Think paddler in Africa. There's no established dealer of Think down there either, so he's always found it hard to make sure that he's getting boats and getting that support down there, and it finally became a little bit too much. To quote Kenny, he says that the rest of the team is at least halfway across the world, so it's been really hard to keep that feeling going throughout the past few years. I was soul-searching a little bit. The world changing presented the perfect opportunity for me to grab the bull by the horns and change with it. It only seemed logical to switch to a local brand and have that same support network here at home. I'm extremely grateful and really excited about the opportunity presented to me by Fenn and able to switch into a new boat. I flippin' love it. Now, that's just a short excerpt, Matt. Kenny did speak really passionately about his time with Think and how it wasn't just paddling for a brand, it was paddling for a different family. He reflected on how close he is with not only all of you guys, but with Daryl as well. The fact that he's watched Daryl's boys grow up and how hard it was to make that decision. So you obviously know that it's something he really wanted to do if he could walk away from the Think family. And Mac, if the Think team is a family, then mate, you're his brother. You're twin brothers. You've grown up together paddling around the world. How are you taking this news and how much of a surprise did it come to you?
I guess one thing I will say at the start, Kenny's obviously done some speaking lessons in the time that paddling hasn't been on. He seems to be speaking quite well. I must say though, it was a bit of a shock. I obviously found out from Daryl. He'd sent out quite a lovely email to, you know, all of the team, you would call it, and the family at larger with dealers included. So, yeah, it was a little bit shocking, but at the same time, I almost half expected it in a way. Not expected it, but wasn't surprised by it. Like you said, he is a half a world away from everyone, and in these uncertain times and without racing, it would have been challenging to not have anyone around, for everyone else to being on a Fenn. You know, Daryl brought us all together in 2014. We just got thrown together, Tennille, the Rice brothers and myself, as this team, and, you know, he put us up to stay, you know, not knowing how everyone's personality would clash or thrive. And, you know, for his ability to just make it happen, you know, we all got on like a house on fire and we really were pretty close. And we traveled the whole west coast of, you know, America on that trip. And we had such an amazing bonding experience and something that I guess we'll all cherish forever. And we were really close. Like, you know, we'd always catch up all the time at different events throughout, you know, across the globe. And that was something that just became normal, which in reality isn't that normal. And it wasn't until COVID hit and, you know, I haven't seen Ken from, 2019 November when we raced in
Sean's
Hong Kong.
Older brother Sean has had a kid during that time that we haven't even
It's like a best mate that I haven't been able to see in 2.5 years is quite a surreal feeling. And obviously life changes. Like, look at me. You know, I didn't even run events and now I'm running the largest surf I'm saving against events in the country. So,
oh, pump it up. I like that. Good plug.
A little bit of a plug. But no, it's like life just changes. Life, you know, rolls on, moves forward, everyone adapts. And I think, you know, in reality, this is Kenny's adaptation to the world that we're living in. You know, and I've no doubt that he's going to be at the forefront of every race, regardless of the ski paddles. And no doubt that this was a really tough decision for him to make. Like you said, there was many different facets involved. It wasn't just a sponsorship involved. It was a friendship, you know, across many different levels that all had to be taken into account. And look, I'm not going to say I wish him all the best. Like, we're still going to be best mates. I think we're going to still, you know, we're still going to be staying in the same places, catching up. Nothing really is going to change. It's just going to be on a different ski and it might even add more to the rivalry that we have going.
Well, that's actually a really good point that you make there, Macca. And that's actually the last quote from Kenny in the article. He says, "As much as Think is a family and Fenn is its own family, surf ski paddling as a whole is a huge family. It's not the kind of sport where people hold grudges because you paddle a different brand." You mentioned a little bit earlier too, Daryl's kind words. I just want to read out a quote from that because I thought it was really nice too. It wouldn't have been an easy thing for Daryl to have to sit down and write, but it was a really eloquent post wishing Kenny all the best. The one that stood out for me is that he said, "Kenny made every paddler feel like they were part of Team Think, regardless of their racing prowess. Ken will always have a family here at Think." But Mac, now he's got a new family joining Fenn at a really exciting time for Fenn too. We're seeing that next generation of Fenn paddlers come through now. It's Kenny joining Nicky Notton and Josh Fenn leading the charge. Some of those guys are the next generation. Obviously, we've mentioned some of the female paddlers already today. There's Uli Hart as well. So many people on their boats. And for Kenny, that's part of the motivation. He says, "It's now sink or swim for me. It's an opportunity to prove to myself that it wasn't just the boat that made me good. I'm excited to have a go at something new." So Kenny's in the new Fenix Elite S. He said that he has been getting his head around that. He said that he loves the boat, but it is a different kind of paddling downwind. The fire has been lit underneath him, Macca. How dangerous is that?
Yeah, look, the fire's been lit underneath me, Sam. It's on. We're ready to go. Imagine being in Team Fenn, though, and then, you know, you're working your way up to the top and they're like, "Psych, Kenny's now on the team." And you're like, "Oh, damn it."
Well, he says that he's at the bottom of the food chain and that he feels like he has a point to prove to the rest of the world. Pretty alarming coming into the race that Kenny has actually won more than anyone else, the Gorge.
Yeah.
It's going to be his debut, his first major international race.
That'll be
over
good.
There. And yeah, it's going to be really good. And for Kenny, I guess, you know, he doesn't hide from the fact there is an added sense of pressure of actually racing there for the first time because, well, he's won the last few, Mac.
Yeah, there was no doubt about it. He said some raving reviews about Think and, you know, how they perform quite well in those conditions. So it'd be interesting to see what happens when he jumps on a Fenn and paddles down the river. I'm sure he'll still be at the front, though.
It's like our very own Drive to Survive, Macca. When we started this podcast and when I started the website, we were waiting for racing news to talk about like this. This is by far the biggest racing story that's broken. Kenny Rice returning to Fenn after 8 years away, 9 years away, actually, rather. He won the under-18 world title in 2013 in Portugal, paddling a glide. So a homecoming of sorts, but leaving the home that made him the paddler that he is today. Watch out, world. Kenny Rice is our mate. He's got the fire. Look out.
Here we go.
Number one.
As usual, it's racing in the number one slot of the power plays on the Paddler's Pod, but not for the usual reason. Now, the second round of the Australian Ocean Racing Series is this coming weekend in Sydney, the Chucky, and it's a race that's held in honour of someone who is really close to the Australian downwind paddling community, Charles Chucky Stewart. He was a paddler, but he was also a television journalist who worked at Channel 9's Wide World of Sports, the home of Australian sport, for more than 20 years. And in that time, he helped to put surf ski paddling, as well as Ironman racing, on the map. He was the man that helped to bring some of the biggest surf ski races in the world right into the homes of Australians. Events like Molokai, the King of the Harbour, the Palm to Pines were on Nine's Wide World of Sports. And there was also the coverage of paddling adventures like Ningaloo Dreaming. We've all seen that documentary with Dean all those years ago, where Chucky was the man behind it. But sadly, Chucky was taken from us far too soon. In 2016, Chucky had just finished paddling when, after the session, he had a heart attack. There were a lot of surf lifesavers around at the time, including his close friend Guy Leach, who did try and perform CPR on him, but sadly, no one was able to save Chucky, and at the age of 65, he had passed away. It was a shocking tragedy that hit not only the Northern Beaches community in Sydney, not just the wider surf ski community, but everyone from around the world who had come into contact with Chucky really felt his loss. And that was where Dean came up with the idea straight away to have a race held in his honour. Well, for Guy Leach, who, as I said, was there at the time, he went in another direction, and he has since launched Heart 180, whose goal it is to get as many defibrillators from around the country into as many places as possible to avoid something like this happening again. Now, Macca, heart health is obviously a really timely topic at the moment. I'm a mad cricket fan, as you know. I think I've spoken about it on the podcast before, and not only have we seen the loss of Rod Marsh during that time, but we also saw the shock passing of Shane Warne as well. So I think the message that's really important to get out there, not only today on this podcast, but around the race as well this weekend, is that paddlers, we've got to get that checkup. We've got to look after our health, because it's one thing that we take for granted, and it can end in tragedy like we've seen all too often around the sporting world.
It's a tough one. Like, we're obviously there, you know, trying our best, trying our hardest, trying to be the fittest we possibly can to live the best life that we possibly can, you know. My close to home story was Dean Mercer, who tragically died, you know, suffered a major heart attack. Unfortunately, he was driving as well at the time. And it's one of those things. It's just a really rude shock, but it's something that's so raw, and it really brings you back down to go like, wow, you know, you really don't know when your time's up, and you take everything for granted. You know, it's when you're fit, when you're fast, when you're healthy, everything goes by, and you're like, don't take a second to think about really like now recovery, or, you know, going to get a checkup, doing all those little things, all those right things that in the end are the one things that make the difference. And I guess that's where Leachy has sort of come in a way is catering to the people that sometimes neglect doing that by having these defibrillators on standby at as many places around the country as we can. And there's been so many instances where he's saved people's lives as a direct result of this. And I think that's quite inspiring. But in terms of the paddling community, and it's one of those things that we just look over time and time again. And something, like you said, this weekend, we really want to reiterate at the race to, you know, just take a moment to think about that. Maybe it inspires you to, you know, if we inspire someone, one person that listens on this podcast, to go get a checkup after the race is done, or maybe even before, that'd be a really cool thing, and something that may in the end save someone's life.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Macca, and it's a really strong message as well, mate. I know that with Shane Warne, oh, I couldn't believe it. And I work in...
Yeah, that was weird.
Oh,
that
was weird. I work in the news industry where, you know, I guess as morbid as it sounds, the newsroom is surrounded by death every single day, but far out, this hit me so raw. Partly because as well, yeah, you know, Warney was 52. Like, my dad's in his 60s now. And I know that he doesn't necessarily go out and get regular heart checkups. We're so lucky to have Guy Leach joining us on this episode of the podcast. And I don't want to take some of the anecdotes away from him, but there's one that actually I was just thinking of just there, Macca. But for me, this actually summed up everything we're trying to make this point today. So in the aftermath of Chucky's unfortunate, Chucky's tragic passing, Guy told his paddling group, which really mainly consisted of pretty fit and active men, that they had 12 weeks to see a cardiologist and get a heart check. Now, there was around 100 people in this group. 12 weeks later, they all got their results. Of the 100, 5 had to have stents put in their hearts, and 13 had to go on medication. Mate, that's 20% of that group. And
it's a staggering statistic.
It's unbelievable. And I know that Leachy's so passionate about this, so I'm really looking forward to hearing exactly what he has to say about it and how we as a community can improve and move forward with this acknowledgement that, yeah, although we are fit in terms of, you know, everyday kind of fitness-wise, it doesn't necessarily mean that we're always going to be fine. So, look, to everyone who is listening, what I want from this episode is for it to be another wake-up call. We've got to put our health first. It's the only thing that we have at the end of the day. So, look, I know Leachy's going to have more to say about that in a moment. Macca, this weekend, there is that cause that is behind this race. We'll be back next week. I'm going to say next week. We'll get another episode done talking about the race. Mate, you're going to have a race in that, so I can't wait to see how you go. But for now, we are...
Not very well. I should go see a heart specialist, I reckon.
I reckon I could do with that
as well. I shouldn't make jokes.
No jokes at all, Macca, but maybe a cardiologist could help me with my pee heart as well. So we will be back just after this, chatting with Guy Leach about not just the importance of heart health, but about his incredible career as well. It's going to be lots of fun. Way back in 1987, on the shores of Italy, Mario and Roberto came together and founded All Wave. They've spent so many years designing sailing boats and becoming masters of fluid dynamics. They redirected their passion to the development and construction of ocean craft, starting with outriggers, then moving into Olympic canoes, and now adding surf skis. That journey from the headquarters in Rome has come all the way to the Paddlers Pod studio because All Wave is the sponsors of this episode of the Paddlers Pod. And mate, I am so ecstatic to have them on board. The team has got a growing presence here in Australia, and I don't just mean by the big dogs, Jackson Collins, Hannah Minogue and Cade Barnes, which we'll chat about in just a moment, Mac, but they're out there at every grassroots race around the country. Stefano absolutely loves this paddling.
He heads up
the team here in Australia, and he does love getting out to those events and meeting everyone around the country. That's how we actually got in touch with Stefano. He just said, "Mate, I want to actually help and get involved. How can I support what you guys are doing?" And that sums it up to a T. In fact, Macca, I think it's pretty good conversation given what some of these paddlers are doing to us in races now, led by none other than Jacko Collins, because the way that guy is moving his all-way boat, you know it's a world-class boat.
Yeah, there's no lying. It's a boat that's definitely a force to be reckoned with, and you know, match that with a paddler of someone like Jacko ability and they almost become unstoppable. Outside of that, I've never actually been to the All Wave Cup. I know Kenny's been fortunate enough to go over, and something that never escapes the All Wave crew is their ability to just have a good time and remember that life isn't always about the pointy end. I always see them having a nice wine, a nice Favino, and enjoying themselves around that, and definitely not losing that Italian culture out of what you said has come up from the grassroots into something here, and we're speaking about it today.
I like that, adding a bit of class to the surf ski world. I think it's not before time,
yes.
Too, but look, where's the pitch of this ad? Guys, you've got to get online and check out their full range. If you're in Australia, that website is allwaveaustralia.com.au. If you're not, just Google All Wave because, look, as we said, they've got some really impressive boats out there on the market now. The DNA, for those towards the front end of the field, the DNA is the really impressive one, and it comes in different sizes too. They've got the large, they've got the 580. Mate, they've even got the DNA double, but I think more importantly is that they've got really good entry-level boats too. The Navana, the RS590, the Mistral, they're all proving really popular with paddlers right around the world.
They're starting to sound like a Ferrari brand, Sam, all those different names. They've got the craftsmanship. That's definitely, you know, tick. They've got the people paddling them. They're at the front of the field, and you can see why that people want to buy their boats.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point, Macca, because, you know, they're not just a fringe brand anymore. They're one of the real deals. So get online, check out All Wave Surf Skis for their full range of boats. Well, we've been lucky enough to have been joined by some incredible athletes and personalities over the 26 episodes of the Paddlers Pod so far, but I am pretty comfortable in saying that today's episode takes the cake. Guy Leach, welcome to the Paddlers Pod, mate. Thanks so much for your time.
Happy to be here, lads. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. On what is
a big week as well, with the Chucky obviously coming up this weekend, and there's a lot of discussions around heart health for that. But the first question that I think is important we get to straight away is that you won the mixed double ski with Candace Warner in round one of the Australian Ocean Racing Series. This weekend, you're paddling with Dean Gardner. How good does it feel, Leachy, to know that all eyes will be back on you, checking you out in this double ski combination?
I think it's important for the sport, isn't it?
Crucial. Some would say crucial.
I think, you know, if we're going to take the sport to the next level, it's these sort of things that need to happen. And, you know, to be fair, you know, it was Dino that was pleading with me to paddle with him because he hasn't had a win for a while. And he knows by teaming up with me, he's guaranteed that.
Who's in the front?
Mate, he always goes in the front. It's
never seen him behind.
No, I literally, so I did the maths with him yesterday, and the last time we won together was the Avon Descent in Western Australia, the two-day race down the rapids. We took line honours, and having to sit behind Dino, who tilts his head to the side and rates like an ever-ready bunny, a battery bunny, for 2 days' worth, nearly killed me. So, you know, tomorrow on the weekend, on Saturday with the Chucky event, it'll just bring back these memories of torture from 30 years ago.
Yeah.
That's quite rich coming from someone who is hailed as one of the best endurance athletes of all time.
Well, it's just, you know what it is? You know the problem with a double ski, which you guys will know, and the listeners, if you've ever been on the back of a double, the person on the front sets the pace. And if the person on the front has got a rating 25% quicker than yours, straight away you're into lactic world. You're uncomfortable because you're trying to basically just rate much higher than you're naturally used to. And that's me. I've got a long, slow stroke. Dino's got a short, fast stroke. And to be fair, we're not compatible at all. At all. So, but he won't go to the back of the seat. So I'm just, you know what, we're doing it for Chucky. I'll have a bit of fun and, we'll have a good laugh.
Absolutely, Leachy. We can't wait to see how it goes. Mate, look, the first thing I want to know, on a week like this, you mentioned they're honouring Chucky as well. How are you feeling?
Like 6 and a bit years ago when it all went down, it was numbing. For people listening, Chucky was like my older brother. So there wasn't a day that I didn't see him or talk to him. And that involved him paddling in my training group probably 3 times a week, playing golf once a week with him. And then beyond that, like he was involved with shooting, filming stuff for my business. He taught me how to sort of, you know, be better in front of the camera. He was just integral in my life. Like he was the guy that you'd ring up when you're chewing the fat and talking shit just because you're in the car and you've got 10 minutes to kill. So he was that bloke for me. And because of it, when he wasn't around with the months after that, it was a real hole in my life in that, you know, it was, you know, as much the fact of a shock to have to do resuscitation on him, the fact he didn't make it, and then try to fill a void of someone that it was so integral in your life was tough. So to answer your question, mate, I'm going all right, and I'm probably going all right because of the fact that I just went and decided to completely change tact on my life and, you know, jump into the deep off the back of Chucky and just, you know, make something of it. And it probably heals me every day doing it.
Yeah, it's a really good point you make there because Leachy, it did change your life. It did change the direction of your life. Can you talk to us a bit about Heart 180 and what you're doing now in this area?
So after, when Chucky didn't make it, the cardiologist at the hospital, I knew the AMBO guys that turned up that morning and they all said, look, you know, there was a gap of about 4 minutes when no one had done resuscitation on him. He turned up back to the beach on Manly Harbour before us. He finished the session a bit early because he wasn't feeling great. And someone was doing resuscitation on him prior to us coming in. But then that guy said, look, I saw him on the ground. I didn't see him drop. And I worked out based on when he left the group, there was a 4 minute gap from what that guy was saying. So I learned after the fact that, you know, had a defib been there and had it been used straight away, he was about a 70% chance of surviving. Now, that didn't happen because, there, you know, there was no defib in that first 4 minutes. He wasn't resuscitated. But I learned that, and I learned that, you know, if it ever happened again in our group and we had a defib, well, then there was a real good chance someone surviving. And so all the guys, there was 25 people that day, that morning, that were all around me as I was resuscitating him, just giving encouragement and all the rest of it. And they all wanted defibs after that happened. And that started it all. So I went and researched about defibs, found the two best defib companies in the world, approached them and said, look, we need them for our group. I want one. And that started the journey. So in that last 6 years, it became a full-time endeavor. I did a deal with Harvey Norman where they supply them out to the general public through my business. And that created a national company, and, you know, and it became a full-time thing, and I flicked everything else because of it, and it made me feel good. So right now, as we speak, we send out more defibs to the community than any other defib business in Australia. So we're number one. One of our devices, we had two saves on the weekend I found out about, one in the ACT and one in Victoria. And so the Heart 180 defib that went out a while ago was used on two individuals over the weekend, and they both survived through the defib. Yeah, so, you know, so we get a save every, I was going to say every 6 or 7 weeks. So it might be a bit better than that now, because it's probably once a month. So the legacy of Chucky is that he didn't make it, but other people are living tomorrow from today because of what we do. And, you know, and it's a good cause, and it makes me feel better. And I don't feel like I'm doing anything other than the thing I should be doing. Yeah.
It's a really good way of putting it. I did see that you had mentioned something on Facebook about Rod Marsh recently as well, and being so close to that incident. Can you talk us through that and what that, you know, that would almost have a bit of a harrowing effect and almost bring back the incident of Chucky in a way?
No, that did my fucking head in. So, just to go back, like 2 weeks ago, I've gone to Queensland to launch Heart 180 partnership with the Queensland Bulls, which is like the Sheffield Shield winning side that is like all ex-players and corporates and members that are involved with it that raise awareness around cricket in Queensland. And so I went up there to launch Heart 180 as the defib business that was going to get, broad awareness and more defibs into the cricketing world. So anyway, I'm on a plane from Brisbane to Bundaberg with Alan Border, Darren Lehman, and Rod Marsh. And so we get to Bundaberg. We're playing in a corporate golf day that day. And then the following night, there's a big 500-person dinner, which I get up on stage and hand out a defib and do a talk on heart health. So we get off the plane. I take in my golf club, so is Alan Border. We're waiting for our clubs. In my golf clubs, I put a defib that I'm giving out the following night. So there's a defibrillator inside the golf bag. Rod Marsh walks past, says, I don't have a golf bag. I'll see you at the hotel. And he got into a hire car with two of his mates, drove off. 3 minutes later, his heart stopped, and they rang 000, and the 000 said, get straight to the hospital. And I'm literally 500 metres down the road at the airport, got my golf bag with a defib there that could have saved him, and all this is unbeknownst to me. So for the next sort of 2 weeks after that, I just kept thinking every hour, what could have been? Had he had golf clubs, he would have dropped in front of us. You know, we could have got him back, you know, hopefully, and he'd be alive right now. So, yeah, sliding door moment, and just one of those things, I think. So anyway, yeah, frustrating.
Leechy, that seems to be such a common trend with all heart incidents that you hear about people having, you know, and we have been hearing a lot about it lately in the news as well. Obviously, with Shane Warne being another big heart victim there. But, you know, there's so many people that always look at these situations and think, it wouldn't happen to me. You know, I'm fit, I'm healthy. Mm. And no doubt in the paddling community, where we've got a lot of middle-aged men, a lot of middle-aged women who are fit and healthy, would definitely be listening to this right now thinking, you know, it's a great point and I take it on board, but I don't need to have a checker. Why are those people wrong? And, you know, what is the message to get these people, all of us, out there and actually taking this seriously?
Yeah, so there's a really good story within my group of fit individuals that I'll go into. But just to go back a step, so just a few stats for people to understand. And then once you understand the numbers, you start realizing that, you know, it can happen to anyone. So sudden cardiac arrest is an electrical issue with the heart. And that can be caused through a heart attack, which is a plumbing issue. So like a bit of plaque breaking off in the walls of your artery and floats up and gets blocked, and that causes a heart attack. Now, plumbing issues of the heart, it's quite common for it then to affect the electrical side, which is a sudden cardiac arrest. You can have a sudden cardiac arrest without the plumbing issue, but it's very common, and which is what happened to Chucky, where he had a blockage and then it went to the electrical. If it goes to the electrical, then you have to use a defib to get the heart back. You've got to still do resuscitation. You do resuscitation so that blood flow can go up to the brain with oxygen in the blood to keep the blood the brain alive. But you need the shock from a defib to restart the heart. So yeah, today here in Australia, 120 people have an electrical issue with their heart and their heart stops. And of those 120 people today, 13 survive. They survive because an ambulance is around the corner and turns up quickly with a defib, or there's a defib close by and they survive. The rest die. If someone drops and there's a defib gets put on the person within that initial 180 seconds, then the person's got about a 70% chance of surviving. Every minute after that initial 180 seconds of not getting the defib on the patient, there's a 10% less chance of the heart kicking over from an electric shock. So if you run that out to when the ambos normally turn up at about 12 minutes, then that's why you've got a 6% survival rate out on the streets of Australia from this issue. So if you look at those numbers, and we had defibs everywhere, then of the 130 people today that dropped, instead of 13 people surviving, 100 would survive and be around tomorrow. So that's the first thing. So it gets everyone. And the other thing to think about is that today, a kid under the age of 10 dies from an electrical issue. Teenagers that are fit and healthy die. And 20, 30, and 40, and 50-year-olds that are fit and healthy die today from that. So what is the solution to it? Well, the first one is that you'd better know what's going on inside your body. Just because you look good on the outside and you're fit and healthy doesn't mean that the insides are going good. And if you don't know what's going on there, then you should find out. So after Chucky died and the dust settled and I could think straight, I said to the 100 regulars in my paddling group that were predominantly guys, aged 39 to 72, I said, you've got 12 weeks to go and see a doctor and get a referral to go to a cardiologist and get your heart checked out. In 12 weeks' time, if you haven't done that, don't come down and paddle, because we don't want to be doing this again, like we did with Chucky. So off they went. They all went and got checked up. Of the 100 fit, healthy, non-smoking, hardly drink, fit individuals that went and did that, 5 had to have stents put in straight away. Of those 5 that had to have stents put in, the youngest in the group, the 39-year-old, who was the fittest and about to go and represent Australia overseas in the States in an endurance adventure race, had 2 stents put in. And there were another 13 cases of individuals in our group that needed drugs to go on to help their heart. So that's just a little snapshot of what happens with a fit bunch of people. So you can imagine the rest of the population out there, you can imagine the ticking time bomb. So the message to the paddling group is this, to the people listening. It can happen to you. It's less likely to happen to you if you're not smoking, if you get checked up, and you're fit and healthy, but it doesn't mean that you're immune to it. Things you can do is get a defib. Obviously, if you haven't been checked up, if you're under the age of 40, I would go and get checked up and go and get a referral to a cardiologist. And if you're over that age and haven't done it, get it done straight away. It could save your life. And I'm more than happy, as I told the lads before we started this interview, that anyone listening, if you go to my website, heart180.com.au, and just hit the contact button and send an email to me and say you've listened to this podcast, you're a paddler, I'm more than happy to get you a defib at wholesale price. because I like to look after my own, and the paddling crew are my own people. So I'm more than happy to do that.
Yeah, thanks, good on you, Leechy. That's unreal, mate. We really appreciate that. And the whole paddling community really appreciates the work that you're doing in this area as well, mate. You're doing awesome stuff.
It's all quite somber, and I'm not a somber person. Take a joke and laugh and muck around and all the rest of it. So it's sort of, at times it's hard having to talk about this stuff all the time, but you know what? It's just, as you said earlier, it's, you know, what you don't see and what doesn't hit you between the eyes, you don't really worry about. And heart health is like that. For me, we've had 4 heart attacks in our paddling group over 18 years, just so the listeners know. So Chucky wasn't a one-off occurrence, and we saved the other guys in the group. So it does happen, and you probably have heard stories of other paddlers that have had problems and not made it out in the water. Now, I'm not saying that we strap a defib onto our back when we go paddling, but what I'm suggesting is that one should be in the car with groups that, you know, when you come in, you never know. That's what happened with Chucky. You just don't know. I've had 2 other people that, one was in the shower after the session, have a heart attack. We got the ambo there in time. And we had another one at breakfast after the session as well. So it doesn't necessarily always happen during a class. And, mate, you can never be too safe.
Well, it's an incredible message to be taking into this weekend's race. For all paddlers, something to keep in mind, a really stark reminder of just how important it is. On top of the racing side of things as well, because Leech, as we mentioned earlier, we're so excited to see you lining up in all these ocean ski races. You're known as one of the greatest Ironmen of all time, but you've got a pretty extensive downwind paddling CV. Talk to us a bit about how much ocean ski paddling has been a big part of your life, and I guess that goes all the way back to Molokai.
Yeah, so I literally, this is quite spooky. So in the 90s, if you were around and you're into paddling, the first we ever heard about Molokai, other than, maybe someone going over and racing in it, was Wild Water Sports. So Charles Stewart, Chucky, actually went over there and covered it. And it was when Grant Kenny was doing it and winning, right? And this was sort of like the late 80s. So I sort of knew about this race across the islands in Hawaii that was really long and tough and all the rest of it. But it fell during our break when the Ironman series and surf lifesaving finished in sort of April, and the race was sort of in May, and we didn't start training until June. So it was like our rest period time. So I didn't do it, but I used to know about it. And the channel that had downwind conditions and all the rest of it. And in 93, I thought, screw it. I'm going to not rest. I'm going to train through the surf lifesaving end of the season and go over there with Dino, Grant Kenny, Martin Kenny and the other boys. And I'm going to have a crack and race it just once and do it, because I just want to do it, because I've seen it for the last 7 or 8 years. And so I turned up over there with those guys, Greg Bennett as well. There was a bunch of us that did it. And I got a win first go, which was really surprising, right? So I sort of went over there and knocked off Grant and Dino and all the other boys that were in it. And then I thought to myself, I'm not going back and doing it again, because I've cracked a win. So I'm not doing it, because, Ironman was big, and I thought, man, if I go back, I'll probably get beat, and I can't go and brag about how I just turned up and beat all the paddlers. So that was my first experience with the sort of the channel and doing all that. I actually went back the next year, funnily enough, as a holiday and handled for Dino. And Dino still hadn't won Molokai up at that stage in 95 or 94. And I handled for him on the boat, and he got a win. So I went around telling everyone that the only reason he won was because I handled for him. Yeah, and he's hopeless, and I got him up. So we've had some good times there, and I've done the 20 beaches when it fitted in. But look, the downwind paddling for me, I started 20 years ago, people paddling outside of surf clubs, pretty much before ocean ski started, on plastic kayaks. And then when Dino brought the first South African ski over it. I jumped on it and tried it, and sort of said, "Oh, this thing's interesting." Da 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 da. And when he started bringing them in, I started taking my paddlers that weren't surf club people and putting them on ocean skis. So that was the sort of the beginning for me of jumping into that craft as well. So it's been a good journey. And like, you know, the interesting thing for me is that for my Ironman career, there's nothing there that I do other than paddling. I don't want to swim in the pool. I can't run anymore because my back hates it. I won't get on a board and paddle on my knees because it hurts too much. So the paddling side of it's the thing I've kept doing, you know, since 1995 when I retired from Ironman, a long, long time ago. And I've never not paddled. And even though now I'll paddle two or three times a week just for fitness, where I live over Collaroy and look out north and south over the ocean, I watch the wind each day. And, you know, I can jump in it where we're racing on Saturday and run it up to Palm Beach and get picked up, or run it the other way down to Manly from Fisher's at Collaroy there. So, yeah, downwind paddling is a big part of my life for sure.
That's spookily similar, what you were saying about paddling being the only part of your Ironman career, because that's the same as Macca's, except I guess there's a few titles and a few years that separated the two of you. Macca pulled up stumps a little bit earlier before he became
I pulled up many of things. I just could never swim. I just sank the whole time.
The irony with the Ironman sport was that if you were going to have a weakness, swimming was the least one that you wanted to have. Because
I was never going to make it, was I?
No, because on a standard board, you can sit on the wash, can't you? You know, you would have done all right if swim league was first. But when swim league wasn't first and you were tired having to swim, it was the swimmers that came through. And I learned that back when I won the Coolangatta Gold in 1984, which was that first ever professional Ironman race in the world from the movie, based on the movie.
What a show that was too.
Yeah, so, you know, I turned up that day, and that day it was run the opposite way, where it was an 11-kilometer run to start with, and there was 100 athletes in this race trying to take the honors and win $20,000 worth of gold, which was a lot back in 84. And I remember coming out of the run leg at about 30th position with 100 in there, but I got in for the next swim, which was, the swim was 5 kilometers. By the time I got out of the swim, I came out equal first and swam through the field, because, you know, people can swim, but if you can swim tired, it's a massive strength to have in the Ironman sport. So, yeah, I feel for you, mate, but if you can't swim, do an Ironman, you take on something else. Yeah.
All right, that's why I took up paddling.
Exactly.
Now, Leach, you were so thankful for your time, mate. We really appreciate the insights that you gave to us about the importance of heart health. And I really want that to be the takeaway for everyone that's listening today, is that go get that checkup. You know, we've got to do it. We cannot take that for granted. And it's something that all paddlers are going to be thinking about lining up this weekend. Mark, are you racing, by the way, this weekend?
I am. I'm going. I'm sure Leach and Dan will probably beat me, saying I haven't been to both for 3 months. But that's
all right. Worried about Macca. We're worried about
him. I'm more than happy to beat you. And I'm more than happy to beat everyone else out there as well if I can.
I'm worried about you actually, Leach, you having to keep up with Dino's rating on the back of that double.
Yeah, you're not sorry around. After yourself.
I'm not looking forward to it. But in closing, if anyone wants a defib, you know, whether it's for your parents, your paddling club, you're like, we have people put them in their cars and just leave them there. So they're, when they get home, they're there, you know, out the front and all the rest of it. You know, these things are super easy to use. You press one button, they tell you what to do, talk you through the whole thing. The latest one we've got, if you have to do CPR, it tells you if you're doing CPR correctly and coaches you through it, telling you to push deeper or push quicker. And we've got online training that comes with it, you know. And for, you know, we're talking, you know, $1,700 for the best one on the market with the training with it. And it could be the difference between your life or someone else's that you could save, you know, down the track. So, you know, I'm more than happy to look after anyone that wants one, for sure.
Yeah, it's not much when you split it between the paddling group, that's for sure. Now, Leachy, before we do let you go, mate, we have one last segment that we do with all of our guests on the podcast, and that is the 10 doubles. which this episode is brought to you by All Waves Surf Ski. So, Leechy, we asked the same 10 questions to each of our guests, and we want to hear you answer them as quickly as possible. First thing that comes to your mind, bit of a cheapskate actually on Zoom, and I did just notice that we've got the 10-minute countdown on Zoom, so that gives us the motivation to get through them all
I'll
the
make
time.
It quick.
So
I'll make it
we
quick.
Want the first thing that comes to your head.
Leechy replicated Dean's rating.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Oh, yeah, no, he's rating, yeah. Yeah, no, for sure.
All right, Leechy, you ready?
Yeah, ready.
Question number one, what paddle length and angle do you use?
211, 65 degree.
Simple. I love it. Question number two, what's the fastest kilometer you've ever recorded?
Don't know. Never done it.
Too fast.
Question number three, what's the furthest you've paddled in one session?
In training?
I'll take either.
Molokai. 50K in a session, 30K, ironically, was always underdone for those sort of races. I never really knocked out anything more than, you know, less than the distance of the race, yeah.
I love it. This one's a bit of a double up. Question number four depends on how you want to answer. I'll take both if you got them.
Mm.
What's your pre-race pump-up song or pre-race go-to meal?
Welcome to the Jungle, Guns N' Roses.
Now, that is more like a Leechy. We've had so many people who go, I don't like listening to music before a race. I don't like getting pumped up. Mate, that is top shelf.
That is like, isn't that like top five best songs ever for getting going, getting pumped
love
up?
It.
Very good.
Welcome to the Jungle, Guns N' Roses. It's a classic song. And you know what? When I was racing, like spaghetti bolognese was probably my go-to before a race. Yeah.
Spagwell. Yeah.
Question number five, what's your favourite surf ski race in the world?
I love Molokai. I love Molokai because I love the whole Hawaiian feel, just that sort of vibe over there, the warm weather. Yeah, I love Hawaii. So Molokai. And you know what? It was the first race that put ocean paddling on the map too. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And you love winning, so that helps.
And I've got a perfect record there, boys.
We'll never let it down. Question number six. What is your ultimate racing war story? When did it all go wrong?
Oh, first Avon descent on the back of the double ski with Dino through the tea trees. And
that's not there.
Helmet on, Dino leading, goes around the corner, doesn't tell me to duck, low hanging branch, hits me in the forehead, knocks me off the back of the ski. He's a kilometre down the course through the tea trees. I'm still swimming through the tea trees, and he doesn't even know I'm off the back. That was the race. Done and they're gone. Lost.
Obviously had some positive impact on the back of the double there.
He's an idiot. Just quietly, he's an idiot. If he's listening, he's an idiot. There.
So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that combination revive this weekend then.
Oh, yeah.
Leechy, question number seven. Who is the greatest surf ski paddler of all time?
Oh, my goodness. That is such a tough question. So I would, are you talking paddler or downwind?
Oh, look, we're talking downwind, but ocean ski races. Okay. You know.
Yeah, I'll tell you. So this, I'll break it up quickly. So Clint Robinson is the greatest paddler of all time across all different, facets. Surf ski, ocean ski, kayak. He's the greatest there's ever been in what he's done. I won't tell it to his face, but he is. as far as downwind paddling, and I've been around since the early 80s, and I've paddled with them all. There's four people that stand out beyond anyone else, and you can't split them. Oscar Chalupski, Dean Gardner, Grant Kenny, Clint Robinson. They're the best downwind paddlers, and I've trained with all of them over time. And if you could get a win up on those guys, not Oscar as much, but his record speaks for itself. But if you can get a win up with those guys in an effort, ever in training, you're doing well. Even the best guys. So I can't split that. Like those four guys deserve their place in history for sure.
I love how you don't shy away from these questions. We normally get someone who goes, oh, I don't want to answer. So I hope you don't shy away from this one.
No.
Question number eight, who is the worst trainer you've ever come across?
You know what? Back in the day, mate, everyone trained hard. So in the 80s and 90s, it was, you know, just to give a bit of background, it was just common that you bled in training. It was just what you did. We'd have punch-ups down in Manly where alpha males would guard each other at the end of the session because someone smashed into someone coming in on runs. Like, it was just, it was like, you know, welcome to the jungle. It was a dead set jungle. As far as shitty trainers go, I'm trying to think who was bad, but it was a good athlete. Grant Kenny never did as much in the back end of his career because he was so busy. But that doesn't mean he wasn't a good trainer, but he could still win. I do remember that, but he did so much work prior to that that he had a base behind him. And I'm not dodging it, there is no one that comes to mind. Anyone that was good worked their ring out.
Yeah. Love it. And if they weren't good, you didn't know about them.
No, they weren't. They weren't there. Like, seriously, in the 80s and 90s when I went through, everyone bled. Everyone worked hard. If you turned up to a training group, right, that's what it was. And it was war. Some guys turned up in training nervous. I had a guy that would turn up, Shane Dalziel, who's one of the best paddlers back in the 80s and 90s. He'd vomit before the session started on purpose in the change rooms to then train.
Far he'd have out, a chuck. Dude. Macca, yeah. I think you and I need a wake-up call, mate. Yeah, Leachy, sure. Question number 9. What do you rate as your greatest paddling achievement?
Winning Molokai first go. Like, you know, I got lucky with the conditions. The conditions suited me on that day. But to never been across the channel at all, I led at the hour and a half mark and I won by 4 minutes. And I had Grant Kenny, Dean Gardner, and everyone else, Martin Kenny, and everyone else chasing me down and wash riding each other to come at me. And I held on for the next, you know, 2.5 hours by myself without knowing the course. Mate, I reckon was a pretty good effort. Yeah,
I reckon that's not special. Too bad either, eh?
Yeah, you know, because I went early. It's not like I led at the back end. I literally jumped those guys in a bunch and got 3 or 4 boat lengths and decided to go. And that was, I wasn't halfway. I was only a third into the race. So for me to hang on with those guys all coming at me with all the experience they had, yeah, it was a good effort, particularly when I was an Ironman and you know, obviously a paddler, but not a full-time paddler.
Bleeding out and training definitely helped. To finish up before we let you go, finish this sentence for me. Question number 10. I'm a paddler because?
Because I love it and it's just part of my life.
Hear, hear, Guy Leach. Thank you so much for your time on joining Macca and I on the Paddler's Pod. And thank you for everything that you're doing in the area of heart health as well. It's an incredible message and we're so appreciative that you're able to come on the podcast and help get it out there.
Good on you, boys. Well done. Yeah, well Thanks, done to you guys too.
That was one of my favourite interviews, I reckon, Macca on the Paddler's Pod.
He's good, isn't he?
It's a roller coaster of emotions because although we had so many laughs throughout that as well, I really don't want people to forget about the importance of what he was saying to Leachy about heart health because, look, that's the theme of this episode of the Paddler's Pod, and I think it's a really important one too. So we are so thankful to Guy Leach for his time. His time is very hard to get. He gave us more than what we roped him in for, so... Thank you, Leachy and Macca. Thank you very much for coming home. Back to the Paddler's Pod.
It just feels right to be back. Hopefully I can beat Leachy in this race on the weekend and I might step up in the fitness department.
I love it.
Nevertheless, I'll be back and we'll be doing this all again next week to rehash what unfolds at the Chucky.
Love it, Macca. Love it. And I can't wait until then. One more thing before we go is that we need to put the shout out back out. I've been pretty slack with it lately. The Paddler's Plug. That's the hashtag. Hashtag the Paddler's Plug. Send us in your videos. We're going to give you a shout out for whatever surf ski content, photos, videos, whatever you've got. Because we love talking all things surf skis. And the one that caught my eye on this episode, Macca, it's hard to go past it given what we were speaking about a little bit earlier on, was Vinny from Miller's Run Taxi posting a photo of Kenny Rice and Nicky Notton paddling their Fenn double ski on the famed surf ski course in Cape Town. They're best mates. They were sparring partners. Now they're teammates as well. What a duo that is. So look out, world, because the Fenn boys are gathering momentum heading into what is going to be a big year, Macca. A big year.
Big year
racing.
Indeed.
So thank you very much. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Macca. Make sure you do get online, subscribe to the podcast, give us that 5-star review. You can give us less if, well, you know, do whatever you want as long as you're telling people about the good word of surf ski paddling, which we will be back to spread next week. Thank you, Macca.
It's been a pleasure. Always a pleasure, never a chore, Sam. Until next time, enjoy.
There you go.
The Paddler's Pod with Sam and Macca.